Let's go to Lahinch first of all, and Anton O'Looney in O'Looney's Bar in Lahinch. Good morning, Anton.
Morning.
How are you getting on there, and how has the high tide reached Lahinch this morning, will you tell us?
Oh, it started nice, but in the last 2.5 hours we're getting pommeled. It's battering Lahinch again. I just saw a couple of minutes ago one of the lampposts down in the car park just go pop into the sea, and it's peeling the tarmac at him like you peel an orange, yeah? Just whipping it up.
This is very similar to what happened on Friday, which we presumably thought might never happen again. You're telling us it is happening again this morning, Anton.
It's happening again, yeah. It's vicious out there. Absolutely vicious. I'm upstairs in the restaurant in O'Looney's upstairs, and we've been slammed by about 8 heavy waves. Really heavy. But, like, you know, every wave that comes in is just doubling up and then just firing into the car park, and then it's going over onto the golf club. The playground area is filled up, the whole lot.
You've been watching the waves this morning, so from your windows there, are you safe there, Anton?
I feel I'm safe. Most people mightn't agree with me though, you know.
Right, you're keeping a sense of humour about it all anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
We'll come to the damage that's been done to your business in a few moments, but these waves, about how high are they, would you say?
Okay, they're breaking about maybe 10 to 15, but when they hit the pram, then they can go up to Anton between 20 and 30 feet high. They're going over the building, basically.
Going over your building, a two-story restaurant there.
Yeah, yeah.
And the waves are crashing to the ground where? In the car park again, is it?
They're crashing into the car park. If you get 3 waves coming in a set, the one is riding on top of the other one, on top of the other one, and then they're bashing into the car park.
I was in Lahinch myself yesterday, and I've seen some of the damage that's been done, but from what you're saying, Anton, there's going to be even more surfaces ripped up, lampposts, you said, even knocked over, and more of the promenade being ripped up.
Yeah, I'm looking at it here now. You know, the capping stones that are on that wall, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 more of them are gone off the wall. There's big rocks down, and there's tarmac strewn all over the place again now. Where they had it, the Clare County Council had it nicely tidied up and piled up. It's just like a demilitarised zone again, if you like to use that word. You know?
Are the waves still coming at you there?
They are, yeah, they're still coming.
Did you
hear that?
I did actually, yeah.
Yeah, that's sounded a wave like after hitting the frontal windows here.
Right, and you're safe because we know that the waves took out some windows, didn't they, along buildings?
No, the waves took out my door, that's all. Here's another one coming out. Did you hear that one?
I did hear it, and I waited with silence in case listeners were wondering, because I wanted to hear it. It's the waves are actually battering the building and coming up onto your top floor windows.
Yeah, and they have been, for the last 2 hours now, because we thought the tide was going back, but it's not, because there's a ferocious wind after cooking up behind it.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't get much more intense than that, does it?
Davey, you were talking about how the Lee McCarthy Cup and the All-Ireland celebrations are for the whole county. In particular, I'm interested that you've been in a lot of schools around the county recently, and you're looking at this not just as an opportunity to show off the cup and to celebrate, but you and the lads, the hurlers, have a particular message for young people in Clare.
Yeah, we started last week, so it is, John. Our aim is to try now to get to every school in Clare. That's our aim over the next 7 or 8 weeks. And it's great going out with a cup that sends out a particular message, and it is good, but maybe we just have a small chance to maybe give a message. And we've actually printed off a leaflet, so we have ourselves, where we've talked about 3 things in it from a Clare team point of view, which is respect, which also incorporates bullying, and how to treat people right and not make fun of them, because we all have our own individualism that we are, and you shouldn't change that. So I think we need to respect people. We've also talked about nutrition and the importance of eating right food, which is something I need to keep in my own mind
all the time.
And then the other thing is we've talked about playing sport, and we didn't necessarily play hurling. We'd love everyone to play hurling, but what we're saying is any type of sport that you want to play, I think it's important for any kid to get out there and just do something and be active. That's our messages that we're sending out. So we have that leaflet. The lads talk about it when they go around. We've talked to the lads that are going around to schools, and we've told them what we want to say. And also then we have the autographs of all the team in the back of that for the kids. So that's our intention, is to try, if we can, to help in a small way.
Right. And they're very important messages, as you said, nutrition, healthy lifestyle, playing sport, keeping active and fit, respecting others and bullying. And these are really pressing issues nowadays that we do need to talk about more. You've put yourself out there and talking about being a victim of bullying and how it affected you. Was that a bit difficult for you?
It's funny how that came around, John. You know, I didn't actually throw it out there to start. What happened was I was doing an underdogs thing for a radio above in Dublin, and your man was with me as I was doing the training, and he asked me, why am I the way I am, that I fight for everything or I fight for a decision? And I said, I stand up for myself. If I believe in something, I won't let anyone tell me I'm wrong if I believe something or something like that. And I said I was bullied as a young fella, which I was, and that's where it came out. And then, listen, when I was asked, all I can do is tell the truth and how I felt, and I don't regret it. It's something that happened, and it's something I had to deal with, and if I can help anyone, I would certainly do it. And the amount of letters I got at home afterwards,
right,
was phenomenal.
You were in school at the time when these things were happening. What age would you have been?
14. Right. About 14, 15, onto that bracket, maybe two to three years of it there. It was tough going, like, you know. So it was very
verbal abuse, taunts, physical abuse?
Both. So I would have, like, it even got to a stage one time, like, it did get to stage most of the time, I suppose, for nearly 2 years there. You normally get the bus from Six Mile Bridge to Innes and Innes back. Instead of going that way, I used to just go down to Shannon and hitch in home. And I never told Mam or Dad or anything like that. I used to just hitch in from the main road back into Six Mile Bridge because I just felt a lot easier, and I wasn't coming across certain people, and that was it, you know. And it was tough, but, you know, I suppose the one thing that kept me going is I had a focus in the middle of it. Even when things are tough, I loved hurling.
Right.
My focus was, stay hurling, you'll love it. And that's what kept me going, you know. And even that's what I've said to some people, is just keep a focus. Even if things are bad, just keep your focus on the thing that you love, you know. And it'll get you through it. I was lucky. I was one of the lucky ones. I was probably stronger. And it went the opposite way for me, where I just even made me more determined to do what I love doing, you know. And certainly that's why I spoke out at the time when mm-hmm. I asked a question about it, you know.
Did that come to an end for you in school, or was it just that you learned to deal with it in different ways? That it just went away
as
then?
The years got on, it kind of evaporated, so it did. Like, they saw it was having no effect on me, like, you know. And I did my own thing. I stayed doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't change. Like, I tried to do different things to suit certain guys, and no matter what I'd done, it was never right. And then I actually got into my own head, stay with your beliefs and stay with the things you want to do. And I changed one or two small little things. I hardened up a small little bit, and I stayed being the person that I wanted to be. And I think that actually made a difference. Probably got more respect for the end, that I wasn't trying to just suit them people, you know, because I think that's the worst thing mm-hmm. you can do.
I presume then people grow up as well, and look at people go through different stages. Maybe the bullies aren't necessarily the bad guys, or maybe they never set out to be.
No,
but did you ever confront any of them? Or
no, listen, and probably talk to a few of them again afterwards. I don't think they realised. They thought it was just fun.
Yeah.
At the time, they were having a crack and having fun and things like that. They wouldn't have seen it, probably, that they were hurting you or hurting your feelings, mm-hmm. you know. And, like, we all have feelings, as we do. Trust me, even standing there on the sideline and fellas roaring at you from a crowd, like, you do have feelings.
It's a dreadful story, Caroline. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to have to ask you about it again, but I'm sure it's something that you've never, that probably never leaves your mind in some ways as well.
No, 24/7.
She carried an EpiPen with her.
No, we didn't carry. I've always been very
Never.
Honest about this, John. We didn't carry the EpiPen with us at all times. We had it, but because we didn't know the nature of the allergy, we never knew how severe it was. We always thought that we'd have time, and as did thousands of people all over Ireland, until this happened to Emma.
So what happened then in December? Were you just out for a meal together as a family?
We went into Jimmy Chung's for a pre-Christmas meal, and it was a buffet style, you know. And Emma thought this was curry sauce she was eating, and it was satay sauce. So after a couple of minutes, our lips began tingling. She went into the toilet and she came back out and she said, "Matt." So when I went up and had a look at what she was after getting,
I realised it was Saturday sauce, so we paid the bill, we left. But by the time we got around onto O'Connell Street, she was gasping for breath. She kept saying, you know, I can't breathe. I went into the pharmacist on O'Connell Street and I asked him, would you give me an EpiPen? I told him I hadn't got a prescription and I'd buy it off him. And he told me no, I'd have to bring her to A&E.
Because you need a prescription to get one.
Well, you need a prescription to get one, but I've since found out that there was a law introduced in 2003 where a pharmacist can dispense in an emergency situation.
You decided you had to go to the hospital.
So we tried to get to the hospital. We crossed at the lights and Emma stood waiting at the corner while I tried to run in and get the car. And when I got into the car park, she stood with my sister. My sister rang me and she said, Caroline, I'm at home to ring an ambulance for Emma. So I came back out of the car park, and by the time I got out the car park to Emma, she was dead on the ground.
I'm so sorry, Caroline. It must have been just the most horrendous moment. I don't even know what to say about it. And did you realise straight away how...
Yeah, I knew. The fire brigade were there within a few minutes. They were only around Tower Street. And they got there at 7:05. We were in the chemist at 6:52, so just after 7:50. And had she got the injection at that time, she'd be still here with us today. But unfortunately, she didn't. So the fire brigade, the ambulance, Temple Street, they worked on her for over an hour. They tried so hard to bring her back to us, but she was gone, God love her, before they even got to her.
You must have been devastated and shocked and just horrified,
shocked,
Caroline.
Still shocked. Still in shock, you know. I still sit some days waiting for her to come home from school for our lunch. And then I just realise that she's not coming.
It's a dreadful story, Caroline. Yeah. My sympathies to you again.
And you have, so needless, I always say, you know.
And that's what really hurts you most, yeah. I think, is that you just can't help but think, what if this shouldn't have happened?
Yeah.
It's why you've decided to do something about it. And tell me about Emma's voice then.
Well, Emma's voice we set up 2 weeks ago because I'm so tired. I'm after sitting for 4 months waiting on someone to do something for Emma and no one is doing anything.
It's coming up to 5:00. You're listening to Clare FM's local election countdown live from the West County Hotel in Ennis on this second day of counting in Clare's local elections 2014. And we're staying right with the action in this Ennis electoral area and this recount, the outcome of which is to be determined. I would say within the next minute or two, we'll bring it to you first. And we'll be telling you who takes that 8th seat on Clare County Council, whether it's Clare Colleran Molloy of Fianna Fáil or Gerard O'Halloran of Fine Gael. Very nervous and tense for them, Madeline. That's tough on them, isn't
it? It's absolutely stomach-wrenching stuff now for the two candidates to be in there inside in the pin with all the
photographers, all the crowds looking at them.
And the crowd.
Us talking about them.
And us talking about them and everybody around focusing completely on them. And like they're in a situation and where there's win or lose situation. So it's just kind of mind-boggling stuff. Extremely difficult personally on both candidates. And I have terrible sympathy for them. Michael, you're smiling. You can because you never were one of those candidates. So go on.
I'm always smiling, Madeline. It's like being at an All-Ireland final, a point between the teams and about 30 seconds to go.
It reminded me of that first All-Ireland final last September when we went to a draw. The feelings going through your stomach.
Least you're going with a group and a team. You're out on your own as an individual and you're part of a party team, but when it comes to something like this, you're out there just on your own.
Is it possible?
But you have the party machine around
I know you
as
have,
well.
Which is very personal because...
Is it possible, and I'll be the devil's advocate, because both sides are so subdued, is it possible we have a tie?
Could be.
And if that's
what would happen in that case?
Don't we go back to the first
No,
the first
we go
round.
Back and count all the number twos and whoever has the most number twos.
Aha, uh-huh. So this is where the number twos and all those preferences come into play again.
Number twos, they play more than just for transfer purposes. They also will decide in a situation of a tie.
So you could have a situation, you're saying, whereby they had the exact same number of votes right now, but you'd be going back to where for those number twos?
Going back to the entire bundle of votes for the whole area and checking which candidate is the most number twos.
Sounds like a lengthy process, Madeline, is it?
No, not really.
Are we
lengthy,
into another
lengthy,
recount?
Yeah.
Wouldn't those doubtful votes have been cast aside earlier
they
on?
They would, but they might... come back into play where there was a question mark over them. Were they really valid or were they not? A lot of things come into play at this stage, and rightly so.
Like this, this is democracy really at its best.
And this is why, really, if you think back to the e-voting, this is why it was such a farce. This is what's critical in our PR system.
And it can be seen to operate, you know. I mean, everybody can see it operating. Yeah. There's no such thing as a glitch of a press of a button or something like that. Or
when I think
having
of, when you mention e-voting, I'll always think of Bertie Ahern telling us how Europe was laughing at us because we had stupid old pencils and stuff like that. There was laughter from other people afterwards, and not so funny when we found out how much was spent on the fiasco that was e-voting. Now, we see they're shaking hands. Yeah. We see Gerard O'Halloran is shaking Claire Colin Molloy's hand. We're not sure of this exact outcome. Now,
I wasn't jumping to conclusions, John.
Claire Colin Molloy is elected. Claire Colin Molloy is the winner here. And Gerard O'Halloran... shaking her hands.
Yeah.
Claire Colin Molloy, for someone who's just been elected, that must have been a nervous process for her. She actually looks upset. But now there's a smile. There's a smile from Claire Colin Molloy. I can confirm it. They look so upset, these two people. Claire Colin Molloy looking upset. Gerard O'Halloran, gracious in defeat, though. He shook her hand. And she's being kissed and congratulated by her husband, Tony Molloy, right now. I can confirm she's the eighth person to be elected for the Ennis area for Clare County Council. And you can hear the cheers from her camp, if you don't believe me. And I have our reporters, Gavin and Aisling, in the area, as you can hear those cheers. And Aisling, talk to Claire Colin Molloy there, please. Oh, you're going to have to reach high because Claire Colin Molloy is up on people's shoulders. And she's certainly celebrating now, in case there was any doubts earlier on. And a big Fianna Fáil celebration there.
How do you feel about that? Because you do, for our listeners out there, Ruth does look good for her age. And she's got black hair to her shoulders. You'll have none by the end of the week. How do you feel about that?
I don't feel bad about it because I guess getting to this old age in my life now, for me, what is part of me is what comes from the inside. It's not the outside. And if somebody's going to look and judge me on the fact that I don't have any hair, it doesn't matter to me because they don't know about me in the inside. And for me, that's the most important thing.
I don't know if they'll judge you, but does it matter to you as a woman when you look at yourself? Do you want to have hair or do you want to be bald? Or
John,
does it matter?
John, you're sitting in front of me. I have a chest that proves I'm a woman. So I don't need to worry about that part.
iDonate.ie, Ruth's going topless.
Yep.
You're doing it this Thursday and people can continue to support you.
Yes, and
you
can
look
pictures up
Aveen's Pink Tie as well online, .ie, avianspinktie.ie. And as you mentioned your chest, Ruth, and you brought it up, the last time you were here you were told me that Davy Fitzgerald signed your...
Yes, he did, hit the honour.
Your breasts.
Well, not the pair of them. Sorry. It was only the cleavage. It's all proper.
Okay. Listeners, I should explain. Ruth asked me a favour when she came in to studio this morning. You tell them, Ruth.
Well, the first time I came in to be interviewed by John, when I was sitting out in the waiting room, I looked at all of the awards that he got. And to be honest, I was kind of a bit nervous coming in here. I didn't know whether he was suddenly going to shoot me under the table or what, that he'd won so many awards. And I was telling him that I had recently got my top of my cleavage signed by Davy Fitz. And he thought it was funny. I've also had Jack L sign my chest and also Jimmy Carr.
Okay.
Missed Arrow Brain, but I'll catch up to them one of these days. So I brought in my pen today for you to just sign the top of my cleavage. And also, if anybody sees me around town today with John Cook's autograph on my cleavage, it's very all proper. No wind exposure. You can also give me a donation for my fundraiser.
Okay, the listeners can be our witnesses. So it's all above board why I'm about to sign your chest.
Yes, and my sincere apologies to your wife for where this is serious. Honestly, this is all above board.
This is the first. I've never been asked to do this, so I'm not going to say no now. So Ruth, bring me your marker.
Okay.
And where do you want it?
Are you left or right?
I'm left handed.
So this will
be
here.
So I'll sign your right breast. Okay, right. Okay, this
cleavage,
is a first.
Not breast.
Look, it is what it is, Ruth.
That's it.
Okay.
You don't have to put in your initial, your middle name.
No, there you go.
There you go. Did you get the name?
Good luck.